This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Junkies and flunkies. Ooh, you hear my voice today? Sounds great because I'm in a great mood. You know why? Because we're back for the attack, baby. Welcome to the NWA Saturday Special. I'm your host, Dr. G, George Robolino. I tell you, this is just a great day today. I am so happy. I think all the NWA world is happy. But I don't want to enjoy all this happiness alone. I have to bring in my co-host. He is the PTB Podfather, Scott Criscolo. I hope you're in a good mood today.
Hell yeah, I'm in a damn good mood. The sun's out. Today is so great in professional wrestling that the sun's out at 11:30 at night. How did you do that?
I'm just amazing.
You are amazing.
That the doctor can do.
That's right. Now, hello, Doc. Hello, PTB Wrestling Network family. Yes, it is a brand new episode this week of the NWA Saturday Special, and it is a fucking loaded son of a bitch this week because not all the news is great, sadly, because for the second consecutive week, we have to talk about a death, and this is a big one. But and I think that person would be very happy as to the rest of the news in the National Wrestling Alliance this week. Anyway, to pull back the curtain a little bit, obviously this show isn't live, duh. The doctor and I usually record Friday evenings, sometime between 10 and 11 o'clock. But today, because I was off from work this week, we're actually recording at about 4:30 on Friday afternoon. So for the first time in NWA Saturday Special history, the sun is still out. That's why I'm making that joke. That's but normally right. We record at night, so. Anyway, it's Saturday for all of you. I hope you're enjoying your coffee or your kettle. Suki, put the kettle on. Yeah. I'm only going to talk.
I got the iced coffee going on here in the afternoon, though.
I know. I actually drank cold coffee that got warm, but nice hot coffee. Cafe Bustelo. Good stuff. Don't put it in a cake cup because you'll end up chewing it at the bottom of the cup. But it's good coffee, though. Anyway, as the doctor said, holy crap, after week of us sitting here crying and moaning and maybe the greatest kayfabe job of all time was by Billy Corgan himself. Because boy, did he fucking work us, huh? Did he work us? We did a whole episode back in what, November on Billy, what the hell are you doing? and he's like, well, I did this.
And here we are now.
Yep, I did this, bitches. So
because we're back for the attack, baby.
We are back for the attack. And you're probably wondering what the hell he's talking about. We'll get to that. The news this week.
Jerk off talking about, right?
Jerk
off. I think it's out there, though. I think it's out
there. No, it is out there. But we've got amazing news. So let me give you the rundown. Of course, for the second consecutive week, though, we do have to do an obituary, which sucks. Of course, last week we lost Joseph Hudson, a.k.a. Josephus, a.k.a. the question mark, which sadly would have been great to have this news involve him. But the death this past week, which happened, I believe, on Tuesday. It was Tuesday or Wednesday. I think it was Wednesday. Might have been Thursday, actually. It was Thursday. So technically it was yesterday as we're recording. But for you listening on Saturday or beyond, it was this past Thursday. We lost the face, probably, of Croc and Roll. No, not Sean Kidd. He's fine. But the guy with which you guys are doing his promotion. Yes, Jim Crockett Jr. Died of, I think, kidney failure. Kidney failure at the age of 76 on Thursday. Of course, everyone knows he was the face, the face and the behind-the-scenes face of Jim Crockett Promotions. Jim Crockett Promotions was not named after him, of course. It was named after his dad, Jim Crockett Sr. He passed away in 1973, and him and his brother David helped cultivate Mid-Atlantic into Jim Crockett Promotions. And for 5 years, of which, of course, you guys are doing most of that stretch on Crock and Roll, they were one of the best, if not the best, depending on your point of view, at least one of the top two wrestling promotions in America from, you know, 83 until 88, early 89. He was a past president of the NWA. 3 times he was. I don't know if you knew that or not.
Yep.
He was a past president.
I mean, he definitely has a big place in wrestling history. And, and he, you know, maybe a couple of different business decisions and maybe, maybe World Championship Wrestling or Jim Crockett Promotions would still be around today. But you know what I liked about him, though? He was a stand-up guy. In some of his few interviews that he's done, he's taken credit for a lot of the failures and the failures of Jim Crockett Promotions. So you have to respect someone like that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, he took over for his dad. They were fairly regional, of course. They were Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling throughout the 70s into the 80s until eventually they were Jim Crockett Promotions. And they considered themselves the face of the National Wrestling Alliance. Remember, there were still promotions, Florida and Mid-South and Georgia, that were still in the collective of the NWA. But as we all know, he considered his promotion, Jim Crockett Promotions, as the face of the National Wrestling Alliance. And then eventually those other promotions faded and they were the NWA. I think a lot of it was that Ric Flair, Rick, when he was NWA World's Heavyweight Champion, he pretty much stayed in Crockett. He would go around a bit, but I mean, maybe he'd go to Japan, wrestle some Japan matches, but honestly, he never went to Georgia. Well, Georgia got swallowed up, but like he didn't go to Mid-South. They recognized it, but it's not like he went to Mid-South. He'd have a match or two with, say, Butch Reed. After the match against Kerry Von Erich in 84, he really didn't go to World Class. And eventually they broke off anyway, World Class. So the Jim Crockett Jr. pushed forward and they created Starrcade. And he had a bunch of different bookers. George South left, went to Vince. He got Dusty. And that's where the Crockett family might have a bit of a schism. Well, really, there's only one left is David. I don't think their mom is still alive. But they were.
Frances Crockett, I think, still alive.
Is she still alive? She's got to be in her.
No.
Isn't Jackie one of the kids, too? Remember they say Jackie Crockett, the cameraman?
Jackie. Yep.
Isn't he a brother, Jackie Crockett?
Yep.
All right, so there's a few brothers left.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, the thing about, Crockett Promotions at that time, I mean, think about it. Starrcade was before WrestleMania.
Yes, it was. And, a year and a half.
You know, they did do a lot of the, at that time, it was the, what do you call it? The closed circuit. They did a lot of closed circuit for that.
Yes.
You know, and they did. You know, the Greensboro Coliseum in Crockett Promotions and, you know, NWA was like the Madison Square Garden of that territory.
Yes, it was.
And, you know, when they decided to start going away from that, from Greensboro, is when things started struggling. And, you know, again, he tried to compete with Vince McMahon. It did not work. The model, I mean – a lot of people point out when he bought the UWF, because if you think about it, and I'm sure, and I know he's spoken about it, what was he really buying?
Nothing. It's not like he had a tape library. It's not like he bought nothing. He just took the brand and the guys.
Because all he really had to do was just start running shows in that territory. I mean, he could have done what Vince did. Now, again, you know, you from a business standpoint, he didn't make the right decisions. Maybe from a moral standpoint, you know, these guys, these old time promoters, they had so much respect for each other. They didn't want to step on anybody's toes. And that's basically what the case was. But yeah, what was he really buying? And then, you know, he took over the offices in Dallas. And so now he was running two offices. And if you know about Crockett Promotions, where they were located in North Carolina, their offices, it was, it wasn't like a Titan Tower or anything like that. It was, you know, small office with, you know, maybe a handful of employees that were running the company.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you have these two companies, and I guess, you know, and the accountant for Jim Crockett Promotions was so bogged down once they took over UWF. It was one guy. He couldn't keep up with all the transactions that were being made. And by the time he was able to sit down with Jim Crockett, it was kind of too late. Mm-hmm. So where he was able to catch up, you know, they're buying, you know, they're flying on jets. And I mean, there were times I heard they'd take a jet, you know, across Georgia, you know, to go somewhere. And, you know, every time you bring that jet up in the air and you have to pay somebody, you had to pay pilots, you had to pay, you know.
They had four pilots on the payroll. And I'm right. Sure gas isn't cheap. It's not like you're pulling into a Global or a Valero to pay, $2.49 a gallon. You know,
exactly. Because think about it. Vince didn't even have a jet at that time.
No. And,
you know, so, I mean, I don't want to bog down on the bad things that happened, you know, with Jim Crockett Promotions. But it's, you know, we're going back in that era, you know, from 85 to 88 on Crock and Roll. And let me tell you something. The product is so much better than WWF was running. But WWF they just knew how to. Vince is about the entertainment, and he knew how to really jazz it up and make it look great. I mean, you know, the presentation. He was all about the presentation, getting out of the smoke-filled arenas, making things look, you know, the lighting and making everything look big and glitzy. And, you know, at that time, the 80s, everybody was into that. And that's what, but if you watch, you know, if you could do a week by week comparison and watching what was going on at WWF at the time, you know, like if you did a podcast, which, you know, probably creating another podcast here for someone, not for me.
Or me,
you know, and what you know, do you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, how you had ones where you're watching Raw and Nitro. Well, how about watching the syndicated shows for WWF and the syndicated shows for Crockett? I would have to say, hands down, and listen, there are probably WWF fans that would argue with me that what was going on in Crockett was so much better. The storylines,
let me ask you this. Both companies, we're getting into a totally different thing. You know that, right?
Yeah.
You could,
well,
you
had, this you is had what
to,
we do.
You had to crack this fucking egg, didn't you? This podcast is going to be 2 hours then.
This is what we do.
Let me, Jim Crockett, right. Jim Crockett's problem was, instead of getting people to keep running Tulsa, you know, Oklahoma, North Texas, Mississippi, Louisiana as its own group, and then run Florida, because remember, he bought your promotion too.
Yep.
He swallowed them all up, and he had too many guys. And then everybody rips Vince for destroying the invasion by burying all the WCW guys. What did Crockett do? The promotion do at Starrcade 87? Other than Sting, he buried all the fucking UWF guys.
They did. They did the same exact thing.
And that's the right thing to do. Not bury him, I guess. But it depends on you. I mean, obviously, Sting was the gem of that deal. And
the thing is, he took over a territory. But, you know, Central States was the same thing. He took over a territory. Remember, things were not going too well in, like, Oklahoma, Texas. The economy was kind of hurting at that time. And that's why Watts got out when he did. Things were, you know, when he started that territory, things started kind of going south, and right. He wasn't able to pull in their ratings. Their TV ratings were great, but their, you know, live event ticket sales weren't so great.
Right.
So when he took this over, it's like, okay, what were you really taking over at this point? And that's where the mistake was made. But I will say this. I mean, he definitely brought Vince McMahon to another level, kind of like how Eric Bischoff did it in the late 90s. You know, I think, you know, Vince felt like he had a formidable opponent. And, you know, he pulled out all those big stops. And, you know, that's why you had, you know, WWF was so successful during that time. And listen, I watched WWF just as much as I watched NWA at that time. And as a kid, yeah, you were into Hulk Hogan, the, you know, that whole thing. But now when I watch things back now, I'm like, wow, you know, the NWA storylines were a little more, maybe a little more adult oriented, and they were more, a little more realistic. And that's probably why as an adult now we like it much better.
Well, that's what it comes down to. You pretty much took my thought. It doesn't come down to who's better. It comes down to what demographic, what is the group that each promotion was looking at, was targeting. Vince right. was targeting families. Crockett was targeting single men, guys. You know, maybe not, I don't know, maybe women watch Crockett, who knows, but older women, you know, the old ladies, they're in the crowd. But
yeah, it depends. It's funny because it seems like back then there were more women watching than now.
Oh, I agree. Don't you feel that? Oh, definitely, definitely. Well, it's a different situation. Now women watch it because, a lot of women like male, you know, regular wrestling, but, you know, women's wrestling in the last 10 years has evolved from, you know, yes. Braun panties and pudding matches to, you know, some women's wrestlers are, women's matches are better than men's matches, depending on your point of view. But Vince was targeting families, so he didn't give a shit if a match was 5 stars. He gave a shit that you were entertained and, exactly. you know, you left the arena happy and you bought merchandise. Crockett just wanted you to enjoy the matches. They focused on the in-ring content, the work rate, and the wrestlers themselves. And we talked about this. Listen, it goes in line with our GWCW and GWWE lists. How many Ricky Steamboat matches did I have on my GWWE list? One. Of course, it was number one, but one. How many Steamboat matches have we had on this, on our list that we're going over? We're going to talk probably about more Steamboat tonight. How many Steamboat matches have we had? Like 13? Because it's crazy. It's a different beast.
It is a different
beast. You know? So I would never necessarily say that one promotion was better than the other. Vince was promoting for families. Jim Crockett and Dusty was promoting for that old school wrestling fan, whether you brought your girlfriend or your wife or your kids is fine, but we're there to give you 35-minute Ric Flair matches. Vince is giving you 9-minute Hulk Hogan matches.
Listen, it's easy for us to go back and say now. Right. It's easier for us to go back and say, oh, okay, one's better than the other because we're at a different time. But, you know, during that time, I loved the WWF at that time. But I love both. Don't get me wrong. But,
I did too.
You got sucked in to the WWF because it was all about the glitz and the glamour and the way the presentation, they had great announcers. It was just very, very well done and professionally done. And they got into the mainstream and that's what Vince did very well. So, I mean, listen, I think Jim Crockett has a place in history in the fact that, yes, he brought Vince McMahon to another level. I feel that. But he also did some great things in creating a big show with Dusty, a major mega show like a Starrcade, which, you know, that stuff didn't really exist before then. And, you know, I feel like some of the stuff that Jim Crockett did that, you know, Vince kind of modeled WWF after and just did it better. And took it to a different level.
And what Crockett did was, and Crockett's problem was the business decisions he made, he spread out too far. He didn't have the proper business model. He had offices in Atlanta. He didn't need an office in Dallas. You weren't booking over there anymore. You weren't cultivating that region anymore. You sucked up all the wrestlers and left them high and dry. So why do you need an office in Dallas? That's stupid. But yeah, was, he spent money.
Just some bad you know, business
bad
decisions.
And that's okay.
And he's the first to admit that.
Yeah, let me tell you something. We have watched two documentaries, two big documentaries in the last that have come out in the last, you know, several years. High Spots did a Crockett doc, a 3-disc DVD set. You can also see it on Popcorn Flicks, which is an app that's on Amazon. I think it's on Hulu too. Roku too. And of course, WWF did the rise and fall of WCW. And in both of them, Jim Crockett Jr. acknowledges, yeah, I fucked up. I took a risk as a business person. I didn't have the full grasp of what I needed to do. And I made a mistake. And I had to sell to Ted Turner. And that's okay. We're not, Jim Crockett Jr. was never vilified for that. They took a risk. And he got pinched. It's okay. But David Crockett sits here and says, my brother's innocent. Dusty Rhodes Svengali'd him into spending money. I have no respect for... I mean, David, seriously. I understand, you know, Sean Kidd's the president of the David Crockett fan club. And that's fine. I'm not the biggest David Crockett fan as an announcer, but he served his purpose. He rah-rah the baby faces. He was like Vince, and that's fine. But David, get over it. I'm sorry you didn't have the capital to buy the company from your brother in 1988. But stop acting like your family is humiliated and Ted Turner is under your foot. No one has ever said that. But your brother had to sell. It was the only thing to do.
He had to do that. And the thing is, too, yes, you could say, you know, maybe Dusty was somewhat influencing. But you know what? The buck stops with the owner of the company. And
exactly.
That's Jim Crockett. And
yes,
he decided to go along with it. He could have said, Dusty, no, we're not spending money on this, or we're not doing this. And if he didn't do that, then you know what? The buck stops with him. You could blame other people all you want. But in the end, when you own a company, you're the one that's responsible. You're in charge.
Absolutely.
And
in the end, David,
decisions.
Exactly. And in the end, David, you're making it worse because you're making your brother sound like a sucker. So just shut up.
Well, I mean, I think the family did have some issues after that. And of course, when you're working together and something like that happens, and you know, I'm sure, you know, Jim Crockett does have some remorse. You know that I've seen in some of the interviews I've seen with him, and you know, especially it was a company that his father built. But I don't think he did much. I think after a certain period of time, he just kind of stopped watching wrestling, from what I understand. So
well,
he didn't really.
Are you talking about Jim?
Yeah.
Jim? Okay. Well, it says here, by November, Crockett attempted a return to wrestling with a wrestling internet broadcast network in 1994 called the World Wrestling Network. It was short-lived, and he left the sport for good in 1995. He also brought the NWA back to the Sportatorium for a brief time, which, of course, now is knocked down. After his retirement, he worked as a Texas realtor and mortgage loan originator. So good for him. He probably had a nice life after that. He walked away. You could obviously, based on what I've read, according to Wiki and actually a few other things I've read, books and other stories from people, his dad was going to have John Ringley, his son-in-law, run Crockett, but instead his Jim Jr. reluctantly took over. I don't think Jim Jr. ever wanted to get into wrestling. But
yeah,
he
there's a lot of stories with that. I had read that Ringley was in charge for a little while, and then I think he got caught cheating on their sister, and then that they pretty much.
Well, we've seen what
that
look like.
Just little bits, you know, pieces you hear throughout the year.
I'm sure what happened. Dusty found baby doll for John Ringley, so it's all Dusty's fault, according to David. I like David Crockett. I know he's very fiercely loyal to his family and loyal to the promotion in the day, and he has every right to be. But stop, you're sounding dumb now, like you have your head.
Yeah,
in the sand.
You know, people get bitter, and understandably so. I mean, it was their livelihood, and I know David Crockett went on to work for WCW, and you know, it's just one of those things where. You know, somebody, because you are fiercely loyal to your family, and even though I know there were some issues with the family for a little while, you don't want to say, hey, my brother really screwed up. But if he's willing to say it, you know what? You got to kind of move on and stop. Now, could Rusty been a part of all that and everything? Yeah, if you want to be upset with him for that, but you can't totally put all the blame on Dusty Rhodes.
Because
the buck stops with the boss.
Did he make some silly decisions? Did he spend unnecessary money? Sure he did. Now, does Dusty admit it? Well, God rest his soul, Dusty's not with us, but I'm sure he acknowledges he probably made a mistake or two and probably but we didn't need, I'm sure Dusty didn't Svengali Jim Crockett to buy two planes and have four pilots on the payroll and fly the horsemen around. That wasn't Dusty's idea. I'm sure it was Jim Crockett's idea.
Well, you know, Jim started getting in with the wrestlers and he kind of wanted to live that high life of the life. And, like I said, it was just a different time, made some bad decisions, but I still think that he did a lot for the, professional wrestling, and I think he should be remembered for the the good things that he did. And rest in peace, Jim Crockett. And a stand-up guy. I have nothing bad to say about him. I mean, I think at this point, you just you remember him for the things that he contributed to the wrestling industry.
He absolutely did. And you know what? Somebody else got too far in with the wrestlers. That led to the downfall of a company, and that was Eric Bischoff. And that's why Vince is the way he is. Vince is everybody's boss. Everybody else gets to be your friend. And guess what? That's why Vince is still in business. You don't make friends with the help. I know that sounds douchey, but the proof is in the pudding. So any event, rest in peace, Jim Crockett. You were a wonderful, you and your dad and your brother. I want to give credit to David. David deserves a lot of credit. He was the babyface announcer. He rah-rah Dusty, rah-rah Magnus.
Hey, and Jackie Crockett, too.
And Jackie Crockett, the great
cameraman.
And yep, whose name you saw at the end of every show, whether it was Mid-Atlantic or the Saturday Night Show. I always found it weird, on a side note.
I believe he worked for WCW as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Who do you think is, the oldest, tenured guy that was in that company? Doug Dillinger? Seemed like he was there for, 15 years, because I remember seeing him on in the aisles in 88, 87. So
yeah, he's probably one of the long. Yeah.
Jim Crockett, rest in peace. I mean, he did a lot for professional wrestling, and
yeah,
it's nice to be able to go through those years. On Crock and Roll, I guess you want to say the glory years, I guess.
Yeah, it was. The glory years.
Promotions.
Was from 83 to 88. And then you guys started in 85 when they bought Georgia.
Right.
But up until they were bought by WCW. And look, WCW was fine until WCW was for the most part fine until what? 99? I mean, yeah, they had a dip in 95. They pushed Hogan and everything. But
listen, again, Bischoff, just like, Jim Crockett, you got to give Bischoff a lot of credit for the things that he did right.
Mm-hmm.
He changed the model. I mean, when he first took over WCW and he didn't, he said, we're not going to run house shows right now. They're losing money for us. It's a losing proposition. Move it to Disney. And he did all kinds of things, too, that were outside the box. And he, again, brought out the best in Vince McMahon, which gave us a great product in the Attitude Era at that time.
Yes, he did.
Obviously, you could argue that too, and we know that. There's some probably things in the Attitude Era that aren't good, but you're not going to get 100% good in everything.
No, of course not.
It's just overall what you enjoy. But wow, I tell you, it's just strange. All these losses in the the pro wrestling world in recent years, and a loss of another pioneer in the wrestling industry. So it's tough because, those are the guys, that really helped shape the industry throughout the years, and, the glory years, even the tough years, but, they were the constants. And it's funny because you were starting to hear his name again, Jim mm-hmm. Crockett. And then here we go, he's yep. gone now. So,
yep. So rest in peace, Jim Crockett, but you should be very happy about the news that also happened this week. All right. Now for the good news. Months and months, Doctor, of a little bit of this, a little bit of that. But we really weren't sure what the future was going to hold. Well, we now know what the future is. NWA owner, this is from, I'll just read the article that we usually get from WrestlingHeadlines.com. NWA owner Billy Corgan has officially announced that the company is returning to action after a temporary shutdown during the pandemic. Corgan spoke with Dan Gelston of the AP, with the Associated Press, so this is how legit this is, and confirmed that the NWA will be relaunching on Sunday, March 21st, with the Back for the Attack pay-per-view on Fight TV. Corgan also announced that the NWA Power will resume that following Tuesday. After previously airing on YouTube in the 605 time slot, Power will now air on Fight via a low-cost subscription bundle in the same time slot. Corgan brought back the studio wrestling concept with filming NWA events at a TV studio in Atlanta, usually just in front of a few rows of fans. He noted that when the NWA temporarily shut down, fans said they did not want the Power series to go away, yada, yada, yada. Regarding the new streaming and distribution deal, Fight has also arranged to offer the Back for the Attack pay-per-view via its cable and satellite partners. It was noted that the NWA had to pull their content from YouTube this past weekend as this was a necessary part of the move to Fight. Makes sense. Back for the Attack is currently available on Fight TV for $19.99. Other NWA content for the past is also available for viewing. Of course, you and I got the two pay-per-views, Into the Fire and... Can I do it? Come on. When do I not
do it?
Hot times! I apparently...
We
Callum
need to
is
get...
A,
we need
maybe
to
I could have Callum
to
record it.
Record
maybe I'll have
it,
Callum yeah. record it. Record him saying, hot times! Anyway. But where'd I leave off? That's the part of the movie. Okay. Corgan revealed that the NWA was in talks with Live Nation at one point to potentially run live events as a way to grow and help bring in revenue. Remember when you and I interviewed Dave Lagana last, Jesus, May? He mentioned that off air with us that they were talking. We could say it now in public since Billy said it, that they were going to do, live shows. Remember they were going to do Nassau Coliseum? How fucking cool would that have been?
Yeah. And we were excited.
Yeah, we were. You and I would have. We would have gone to that show. I think he said they were going to do Philly. You and I would definitely have gone to that show. Yeah, I'm happy with them putting the live event concept out. Well, we can't anyway because they don't know. We have to wait till we're back to normal and have people. We were never. Here's the quote. We were never in any financial peril. We were totally on a growth pattern. This is Billy. The plan for last year before things kind of hit the skids was to start pivoting. We were in discussions with Live Nation about running live events to help bring in revenue and expand who was watching the product. It was more about growing pains stuff, but we didn't have any problems internally with the product. Corgan said he was thrilled to partner with AEW boss Tony Khan to keep the NWA active in some form over the past year. Obviously, the company's been down, and he's kind of helped us bring the – he's been a friend to me, yada, yada. The NWA Back for the Attack pay-per-view will be dedicated to the... Is he like Tom Hanks? Is he Tom Hanks? Oh, that's Peter Scolari, not Rick Moranis. Is he Dave Thomas?
Your disdain for AEW just shows.
Is it Dave Thomas? Do you listen to Main Event? I want you to listen to Main Event this week. I'm going to pivot for a minute. Of course, we had a brand new episode of Main Event drop on the Place to Be Wrestling Network, and I actually took a breath. And both Nate and Steve let me sit back, and I gave my full explanation why I hate Jon Moxley. Not hating AEW. Had nothing to do with AEW. AEW just were the recipients of it. Why I hate John Dean Ambroxley. I gave my... And that's it. I'm never speaking of it again. And if anybody disagrees, then you disagree. But I'm not changing my mind. You could bully me all you want. It ain't happening. I'm one guy you're not going to push over. So I'm not. I don't run wrestling rooms and that kind of thing. And we're, you know, that kind of thing. I gave my opinion. You don't like it. You don't like it. I don't care. So anyway, if you like it, great. And if you don't, I respect that too. I'm finding where I left off. Okay. Back for the Attack pay-per-view will be dedicated to the memory of Joseph Josephus Hudson, who passed away, of course, last week. When we talked about that on the show. Nick Aldis has been announced to compete on the card, while other names being advertised include Aaron Stevens, The Pope, Trevor Murdoch, Tim Storm, Thunder Rosa, and Camille. Aldis says he's incredibly pulled out of the deal, yada, 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 yada. So is Thunder Rosa, yada, yada, yada. For so many, it was noted in the Associated Press that all upcoming... All right, it was noted in the Associated Press piece that all upcoming NWA events will continue to be held without fans and without artificial crowd noise, giving it more of a natural feel like a UFC show. Stay tuned for more on the return of the NWA. There's a poster and all that stuff. So we were worked. You know what? Maybe the greatest carny worker of all time is Billy Corgan, because he worked all of us. Here we were thinking he was in hit the skids. He wasn't talking about wrestling. We're watching him do albums on Twitter and everything, and we're like, oh, we're fucked.
Well, I don't think we.
Were we,
I mean,
totally
we,
slaves?
We spoke about, I mean, I don't think we totally thought that the company was going under. We just weren't sure about what the direction was and what he was trying to do. But, I mean, you have to give him credit, doing a little bit of the UWN thing, kind of keeping the name out there, doing the stuff with AEW, just keeping the NWA name out there a little bit. You know, that. So he did. He did have some – he knew what he was doing in terms of just keeping the name alive. And, of course, you know, there's other podcasts, you know, like us out there that love the new NWA, and we're trying to keep this thing alive, and we were doing the best we could, but we had to, you know, go back to the old stuff just because there was not much to report on.
Right.
In regards to the current NWA. But this is very exciting. We knew, and we mentioned this, you and I spoke about this plenty of times, they were probably going to have to go to some kind of pay model. When you don't have fans in the crowd, you needed to do something. Is it disappointing? Because, you know, you were getting all that stuff on YouTube, but I didn't think they were going to be able to survive with that model. They had to do something.
Yeah, they did.
And I think it's going to be cost effective. This pay-per-view is what, $20?
$20. Yep.
And I don't know what they're going to do for the Power shows. And you
something
know,
tells sure gonna... me, something tells me for Power, they're going to do exactly what UWN Primetime Live did. I think it's going to be probably $25 a month for probably four shows, and maybe $8 because I think it was $7.99 an episode of UWN Primetime Live, and it was $25.
Yeah, I think they'll keep it cost.
So it was like four for the price of three. So if you paid monthly, it's like you got a show free. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that.
And their jobs, though.
I paid $50 for those last. All I'm saying to you is, we paid $50 for those last two, eight episodes of UWN Primetime Live. And if I gave money for that, I have no problem giving money for Power. I'll tell you right now.
No, I agree with you. And the thing though, Scott, what you got to think about is with the current model with this, the pressure's on them to really put on a good show. You know, when they're doing these shows, because you want to be able to say, okay, now I want to pay to tune in the next week or the next bundle or however they're going to do it. So, you know that they're probably going to have to be some gripping storylines to keep us coming back. Now, the question I have in all this is they don't have a gigantic roster right now. Now, they may be signing some other guys. So they're going to be using wrestlers from other organizations. That's my assumption. Whether it be some of those UWN organizations, you know, on the West Coast, whether it be even AEW, maybe some of their guys, because you know their roster is getting bigger and they don't have a, you know, an NXT. So maybe we're going to get some of their guys, some of their lower guys. You know,
yeah.
We don't know, but I'm excited. I'm excited that we actually could be. The NWA Saturday special will be talking a little bit more of the current stuff. I love talking about the old stuff. Don't get me wrong. But you know what? That's not why this show was created. This show was created for the new NWA, and that's what I'm looking forward to talking about each and every week. And I think we'll be able to do that soon.
I think we're going to get you very wrong. I don't know. The way you said that. Don't get me wrong. I'm always getting you wrong. No. Doctor, you're absolutely right. And
you
again,
fight?
You want to stick my Yeti in your fucking forehead?
Well, maybe we could get a good old, you know, barbed wire explosion match on the NWA. What do you think?
Don't get me started on that. I went into that on Main Event this past week. And
And
everybody agrees with me, even Steve Willey. When Steve Willey agrees with me, I know I'm justified in my comments.
Oh, boy.
So two guys who, you know, are a couple of wimps are going to try to do this ridiculous match. What are you going to outdo Cactus Jack and Terry Funk? Good luck with that. But we're not talking about that. We did. But please listen to this week's episode of Main Event. We did preview Sunday's AEW Revolution pay-per-view, which that might have some surprises. Apparently this big Main Event guy, I think it's Coco Beware. That's just my opinion. But I'll tell you something right now. If it's Brock Lesnar, I'll be the biggest. You'll hate my fucking guts because I'll be the biggest Brock Lesnar fan ever. But that, I don't think that. I don't know who it's going to be.
It'll be the biggest
anyway.
Brock Lesnar. You're such a freaking heel. You really are.
I am. I'm such a heel.
And you're all over the place.
I know. But listen,
one minute you love the WWE, the next minute you hate it.
I hate it. I love the NWA. What I'd like to see next. All right, let's get back to topic because we could talk about WWE anyway. But listen, the NWA. But this does correlate, though, in all seriousness, because that fan base, the NWA fan base, and there's not just you and I. We got a lot of people that I know like the NWA. They don't like any. They don't want to watch WWE's kind of disjointed storylines. They don't want to watch AEW's spot fests. That, you know, they don't know how to tell stories in the ring. They just kind of throw their bodies all over the place. But they don't want to watch WWE's kind of like disjointed way of doing things. You know, so what I'd like to see out of this, and we'll talk more about this, obviously, in the coming weeks, is I hope that Billy maybe goes back to Ring of Honor and kind of recultivates that relationship, because Ring of Honor could certainly use it. Maybe make a relationship with New Japan. Maybe, well, although New Japan and AEW were working together. But hey, what is it? Well, according to Tony Khan and... Billy are best friends. Maybe they'll let some New Japan guys go to NWA. We'll see. So that's what I want to see. I'd like to see Billy kind of cultivate with Impact and with all these other. So, you know.
They're going to have to create something, though, on the page. There's going to have to be some surprises. There's going to have to be some, you know, it would be nice to see, you know, some wrestlers, maybe even from the other companies, even AEW, you know, UWN, Ring of Honor. That would be... maybe even Impact, you know, just to, you know, just to add a little flavor, which they were doing with the power shows.
Yep.
You know, they're going to have to do something that's gripping. Now, it's just going to be interesting to see who Nick Aldis is going to be facing.
Well, here's here's what I think. Let me know what you think about this. Of course, next week on the show, on next week's Saturday special, we'll probably know some matches and give a little. And of course, Let's do this first. Then I'm getting jumping ahead of myself. We got so much to talk about. I'm so excited, and the sun is setting, so then it will be like darkness. But I had said for a few days that I think there was a guarantee we were going to get round three of the rivalry between Thunder Rosa and Serena Deeb for the World Women's Title. But as we've seen, Serena Deeb just got her knee scoped, so she's out. So we won't have a Women's World Title match. I think, though, we will finally get the match everybody wants to see. Thunder Rosa versus Camille. That will definitely happen on March 21st.
Yeah.
Definitely. Now, I think we will. Apparently, all the champions will be there. Nick Aldis, obviously, world's champion. They mentioned Trevor Murdoch. He's our national champion. The Pope, Elijah Burke, still our world television champion. They mentioned Shooter Stevens, Aaron Stevens. They didn't mention his tag partner, though, J.R. Kratos. They're the world tag team champions. I think we're going to get into like a number one contenders thing. A number one contenders type match for a future match with Aldis for Sweet Charlotte. Maybe on Power. So that's what I'm thinking. But obviously stay here to the PTB Wrestling Network for all your NWA news, and obviously Dr. G and I will be back next week on our next episode. We'll probably know more stuff the following week. But looking ahead, we've already set the schedule up, so be ready. Next week, of course, obviously our regular show. If we have any new news, we'll let you know. The following week, on the Saturday, March 20th episode, we will do a full Back for the Attack preview special. And then on Sunday night, March 21st, probably drop around 8 or 9 o'clock. I know WWS Fastlane, you and I will do a special edition, NWA Sunday special, and you and I will recap Back for the Attack. So plenty of NWA.
We got to get a new shirt.
A new shirt. That's right. A new shirt. No. I don't know. Well, it won't be the Saturday special logo. I'll probably put the Back for the Attack logo up on the site. But... yeah, so I think merchandise will come back. I think we're in good standing. Here's my we're starting in March. Maybe they'll do it in May or June. I have one question for you before we change topics. As of right now, let's say May or June. I think April's a little too early. Let's say May or June. Do you think he retries to do the Crockett Cup?
Maybe a little later than that. You know, again, things are starting to open up. I do think eventually we got to get back to some people in the crowd. No, you know, let's see if they do this in March. Yeah, maybe June. The latest July. You know, obviously they're not going to do a pay-per-view every single month. You can't do that model right now. But every 2 to 3 months, I could see them doing something.
I think pre-COVID last year, I think we were going to have the Crockett Cup. Remember, we were supposed to be in April. We were going to get – now, Marty Skrull's in New Japan now, so we don't have to worry about that feud. That storyline's pretty much dead. Plus, Marty's kind of tainted goods with all the allegations and stuff. I think his plan was to do a pay-per-view in maybe August or even September and then do another Into the Fire in December. But it sounded like they were kind of going monthly because they did a pay-per-view in December, then they did a pay-per-view in January.
Yeah, you know, that was weird. I mean, with the whole contract with Fight TV, I mean, there's endless things that you can do. And I think, you know, obviously Billy wants to keep these guys working. So maybe we could see something. But I'm excited. I say let's just take it one step at a time. Let's see how they do with this. Let's see how they do with the first power tapings. And then we can start making our judgment. And hopefully we're going to get something that we really like and that we enjoy. And, you know, the thing is trying to add to the roster because, you know, right now the bigger companies are purchasing a lot of the guys, or, you know, a lot of these guys had to go to these bigger companies to keep working. So, you know, it would be nice to see that he does have some kind of relationship with AEW. Cause I think AEW and like Ring of Honor should use NWA as a, I don't want to say a training ground, cause that's not the right word, but you know, to get more in ring time. Remember, AEW only has one day a week, really. So,
well, I think that's going to change. I think that's going to change.
Yeah, it will change. But I think you got to get some of these guys some more work, the guys and gals some more work. So
I agree.
I'm looking forward to it.
I agree. And let's think about the roster for a minute, because who have we lost? The only couple of people that I think three legitimate losses we've had. We lost Eddie Kingston.
Yeah, that's a big one.
We lost Eli Drake, who is now named after a early 90s sneaker, British Knight. Oh, wait, that's Demon Knight? That's a vampire show. Oh, no, L.A. Knight. That's what we're going to call you. We're going to call you Norwalk Knight. Although, depending on we all are, I guess, right? Anyway. I think Allison Kay went to – did she go to AEW? I think she did. Anyway, the two big ones were Eddie Kingston and Eli Drake. They're gone. But remember, Dave Marquez still works with all these Championship Wrestling from Hollywood guys and all that. I would not be surprised. Because who's the one guy of all those primetime live guys? Who was the one guy we were the most impressed with? Do you remember? Who was the one guy that every week we want either – when he was on, we loved him, and when he wasn't on, we were pissed.
Well, what, Chris Dickinson?
Well, Dirty. Chris Dickinson. Oh, you know, I didn't think of him. That's not who I was thinking of, but Chris Dickinson's working in
Hammerstone.
Right now, so, Hammerstone. Come on, that guy's awesome. And he could be a good, fun surprise at Back for the Attack to wrestle Aldis for the world title. But I think we're going to see some kind of a number one contenders. And don't forget, Billy was promoting Superpower. Remember, it was kind of like Power on roids. So those could be big shows. The one thing about Fight TV, Fight.TV, they could do anything, anytime, like you said. So I think this opens the door for Billy to do whatever he wants. So we're just excited. I mean, we're just legitimately pumped. There's no two ways to describe it. So next week here on the show, I'm sure we'll have more information for you on how much power is going to be on Fight, and maybe we'll have some matches. We may have some matches set up for you already. So, we're just legitimate. We're just pumped beyond belief. Just so pumped.
More on that.
More on the new stuff next week. But yes, pay-per-view, power's back. Ugh, I'm so excited. I'm legitimately excited. My opinion, I think he's back in Ring of Honor. I think, here's my prediction, quickly. Or my theory. I won't even say a prediction. You know who deserves a legit world title match? Because I think he got screwed on his. Mike Bennett. Mike Bennett. Yes. Because his title match was a fucking mess on that Primetime Live. He needs a legit world championship match. Give him one at Back for the Attack. That's my opinion. While you're trying to figure out like your roster and what to do and things like that, because I'm curious to see who's booking now. They don't have Dave. Listen, I would get guys like, who's kind of floating around there? I would get like, see, it's a shame that Arn's in AEW, because if he didn't need the money, I could definitely see Arn booking here, because this is his wheelhouse. But yeah, you know, he's making good money in AEW, and he's likes giving the finger to Vince, and that's good. I'm happy for Arn. He's good to do that. And I wish he was still with WWE, but who knows what happened with that. But anyway, I'd like to see what kind of booking guys and gals that Billy's going to put in his little circle. Because I don't think Dave was really doing a lot of booking, per se, like the wrestling. I think he was doing mostly, you know, production stuff. Maybe Aldis will book. You know? Who knows?
Yeah. It's going to be interesting. I'm psyched.
Oh, I'm totally psyched. So every week now, everyone, the Saturday special is back with nice, fresh, new NWA content and discussion every week. So, but we still have some history to discuss, sir.
Yes.
Because it is time now for our ninth installment of yours and my GNWA/WCW reveal. And 80 down and 20 to go. Now, before we move on, of course, elsewhere here on the PTB Wrestling Network, you know, of course, that our friend Marty Sleaze and his boys over at Pro Wrestling Love, they did their countdown. And now, every other Wednesday, two very good friends, Tyler Kelly and Jambalaya Jake Williams, are counting down their GWCW list. This past Wednesday, this coming Wednesday, my bad. This coming Wednesday, they'll be on numbers 80 to 71. So, should be very exciting. So, or is it 90 to 81? Anyway, the next episode of Jacob and Tyler's GWCW reveal will be this coming Wednesday here on the
PTV. Oh, you got to get it together.
I'm so excited. I don't even know what the hell I'm talking about.
Yeah, you're all over the place.
I am all over the place.
Yeah, I've been drinking.
Let's do plugs before we, I want to get that out of the way. We got some great shows here in the PTB Wrestling Network. Let's see. Okay, so it's 80 to 71. Because I'm looking. The last one that aired was on the 24th. Jacob and Tyler revealed 90 to 81. So this coming Wednesday, Jacob and Tyler will reveal numbers 80 to 71. So Place to Be Nation's main event. As I said, we talked AEW, New Japan, NWA. We did our classic TNA pay-per-view recap. A lot of fun with that. Newest episode of PTB NXT dropped. Tim, Jenny, and Jake did three episodes of NXT from August of 2014. Your good friend Rory McNamara, your pal there. Newest episode of Senior Video, him and Sean Kidd, who does more podcasts than I do.
Huh? Classiest guy in podcasting.
Yeah, he is, Rory McNamara. They did the 1987 Heart Foundation Coliseum video, Dr. G. So check that out. Looking ahead this week, we will have new Pissed to Be podcast. Will be Monday. Mr. Rosero, myself, and Steve Bennett will be doing the November 30th, 1991 MSG House Show. New episode, as I said, Jacob and Tyler with the reveal. New episode of Extreme Resurrection this week. James Grunberg, Michael Cook. Full day. I think we have a show that drops every day this week. Wednesday, Jacob and Tyler's next reveal episode. Thursday, Highway to the Impact Zone. Logan Crosland. And then you find gentlemen next Friday with a new episode of NWA Croc and Roll, and it's very special. Not like the Different Strokes Very Special with, you know, Dudley and Arnold at the bike shop, but a very special.
Come on with these things.
I have no idea. I have no idea. But I have no fucking clue. I don't know. But you guys have a very special episode of Croc and Roll this coming Friday. So looking forward to that. The PTB Wrestling Network. It's the fans' feed. There'll be also something dropping on the feed later today, Saturday, that I'd like everyone to listen to. I'm not going to tell you what it is, but I want you to listen to it. Okay. Time to get a little history, Dr. G. As mentioned, right, 80 it. Down and 20 to go. So tonight, we will do numbers 20 to 11. And you know that all these are going to be studs. So now we're going to get into some matches, Doctor, that you may think should be higher. Or maybe I ranked them too high. Or maybe I ranked them too low. I'm curious now your thoughts as we're getting into some rarefied air here. Are you ready?
Yeah, ready to have, let's do it.
Ready to have a ton of fun here. At number 20, you've been waiting for this match. I know you've been waiting for this match. We go to Fall Brawl 1995 for a match you never thought you'd see. Best friends on camera, best friends off camera, but they finally wrestled face to face. Ric Flair and Arn Anderson.
Yeah.
You know, we never thought we'd see the two wrestle against each other, but I guess the storyline was Arn was getting tired. Flair was picking unnecessary fights, and Arn was having to fight all his battles, and Flair was getting on his nerves and this kind of thing. And it led to this match from September 17th, 1995, Fall Brawl. The match is amazing. Are you surprised it's amazing? Of course not. But
no.
But the best part about it is if you never thought, and this is not the last Arn match, let me tell you, not the last Arn singles match. Let's put it that way. But I think this match was needed to validate a lot of people who thought that Arn was just a tag specialist. Yes, Arn had a ton of TV title reigns, etc. But you never really wondered whether Arn was that kind of wrestler until he had this match. Agree or disagree? What do you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, we knew what Arn could do in the ring, but he's wrestling one of the best, if not the best, of all time. And he hung in there with him. I mean, this match is just phenomenal. I think it's in a pretty good position. Mm-hmm. But just watching these two and the psychology between the two of them, it's just phenomenal. It's, you know, two of the best heels in the business at that time over the last, you know, 15, 20 years. And they put on a match that you expected. You know, mm-hmm. when you see that on paper, you're like, this is what we expect to get, and you got it. And I love it. I love it. And it's funny because I've really gained more and more respect for Arn as I'm going back and watching all these shows.
Me too.
Rock and roll.
Me too. Arn is going to be very high on my list when I start formulating my maybe we'll do it together, Doctor, again. Our GNWA/WCW superstars list for 2021 that will be revealed in 2022. Arn is right now, I don't know where he'll be. But
you could call them wrestlers on that list.
Oh, I can? Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
I know you're anti-Vince. It's okay.
Not anti-Vince, but...
I could say to you like you say to me, you make me laugh, you're so anti-Vince, like you tell me I'm anti-Tony Khan. At least Vince doesn't look like Rick Moranis, okay? Everybody agrees with me, okay? This match, again, it's also at a time in 1995, and I've said this on other shows, 1995 was not the best year in wrestling for either promotion, WCW. Probably the best wrestling in 1995 was in ECW. You had some good wrestling in WCW in 95, but Hogan was champion, so the top of the card was glugged with bums. The mid card was pretty good, better than WWE at the time, but there was still some rough patches in 95. If you ask anybody, probably the best promotion in 95 was ECW. I think so. You and I watched a ton of ECW in 1995.
Definitely.
But there were some gems on both. There are plenty of, I mean, on my GWWE list, I have plenty of matches from 1995. But overall, both products were a little shaky in 95. But there were some gems, and this is one of them. So number 20 on our list from Fall Brawl 1995, that match, Ric Flair versus Arn Anderson. At number 19, probably one of the most violently fun matches. I don't think you've ever seen this match, Doctor. I added this one. I don't know if you've seen this one. Probably one of the most violent tag team matches in Crockett slash WCW history. We're going to go to Spring Stampede 1994 for a match that probably everybody has varied in their lists. It's a street fight. On one side, the Nasty Boys, and on the other side, Cactus Jack and Max Payne. And this match has been discussed. It's on McFoley's DVD. It's been discussed for a long time as one of the best matches of all time. And definitely one of the best.
I have, believe it or not, I have seen it. Not recently. I have seen that match, and that is a good match. I mean, you know, when you see, you know, Max Payne, you know, thinking, oh, okay, what are you going to get here? But you know, in this match, Cactus and Max Payne did a great job. And the Nasties are just like their name. They're just nasty. You know, they could brawl with the best of them. You know, they've had some good matches over the years. I know that they take a lot of criticism, but the Nasties and the Steiners really work well together as well.
I'll tell you something. The Nasties remind me a lot of a comparison we've used a lot in our countdown, Doctor, with our comparisons with Rick Rude. Like, I feel like when they were in the WWF, they won the titles from the Hart Foundation, kind of fucked off for a few months, and then got their ass kicked by LOD at SummerSlam 91, and then they kind of faded. But once they got here, you're talking about a lot of big moments and great matches. I think they were
definitely better in WCW. I agree with you.
Yeah. So at number 19 on our list, we don't have to talk a lot about this match. Everybody has it on their list. From Spring Stampede 1994, the street fight between the Nasty Boys and the team of Cactus Jack and Max Payne. And Mick Foley was slowly building his resume. It would be a year after this that he'd have his barbed wire exploding death match with Terry Funk, speaking of that gimmick. At number 18, there's nothing to say about this match. A lot of people may have it higher. This is one of those matches, Doctor, kind of like the Sting Flair match at Clash 1, where I think time has knocked it down a little, but not a lot. It's the match that really springboarded Ric Flair into our consciousness. You know what match I'm talking about. From Starrcade 1983, in the steel cage, Harley Race and Ric Flair for the World's Heavyweight title in the steel cage. This match, if we did this list like maybe 15 years ago, I probably would have had this match in the top 10. I think there's better Flair matches. I think there's better Harley matches. And yeah. Nick Kaniski is a horrendous referee. He doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. Having said that, the match is amazing. What's that?
Gene Kaniski, you mean?
What did I say? Nick? Nick was his son, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Nick was his loser son. Who was actually pretty good heel in World Class. He had that Canada jacket. I had no problem with that. Gene Kaniski, former world's champion. Nick's his son.
Yeah, I mean, I don't totally hold his nonsense against them, but I see where you're coming from. I think, you know, over time, because you're able to see so much more out there, that there's probably better Flair and Harley matches, but this one's pretty legendary, though. This is one that you know, a lot of people, if you mention Ric Flair and Harley Race, a lot of people will say, oh, Starrcade 83, and that's probably because of the event itself too,
right? Yeah,
and
no, exactly.
It's a cage match.
Yeah, no, exactly, I agree 100%. There's not a lot to talk about this match. I mean, it's Harley. Of course, we don't have a ton of Harley here, because obviously, based on the window, early, you know, when Flair was champion, Harley was taking time off and he was working mostly Kansas City in his local promotion. He didn't get back into the national scene until 83 when he beat Flair. And then after that, he pretty much faded and then joined the WWF. And so if we had done 71 to 01, there would have been a ton more Harley on this list. But this is probably Harley's best match, and probably last great match, except for the one Saturday Night's Main Event match he had with Hogan that was really good. the one where he hurt his stomach, his abdominal muscle when he landed on the table weird. But this match is the match that made Flair what he is today. So we had to have it on the list. At number 18, from Starrcade 83, Harley Race and Ric Flair for the World's Championship inside a steel cage. A Flair for the gold. Number 17, the final match between these two guys on our list. We've had multiple matches. This one, I think, is actually their best, believe it or not. I think this one surpasses the one I just mentioned. We're going to go to the Great American Bash 1990, Ric Flair and Sting for the World's Heavyweight title. I actually like this match better than I like the 45-minute draw 2 years earlier.
Yeah. I agree.
I think Sting matured as a wrestler in those 2 years, and the crowd was more invested. I think the crowd energy was boosted from what it was 2 years earlier. Because don't forget, in 88, Sting was, it was Sting's coming out party to the masses, but he didn't have the cachet that he does now, or the sachet cachet that he does now 2 years later in 1990, when he was legitimately the top babyface in the company. I think more than Luger, even. I think Luger was a face in 90. I don't think he turned heel till the end of 90. But I think just minute for minute, and I'm curious Chad Campbell's thoughts on this. I think this match is better than the draw. What do you think?
Great. I totally agree with you on that one. You know, because again, like you were mentioning about Sting, he matured. You know, it's so tough because I feel like they always had great matches together. So it's, mm-hmm. you know, it's one of those things you're trying to pick one over the other, but, right. But I like this one better.
Yeah, I agree. And I gotta thank Nate Milton, the Godfather, because when we were doing GWCW match picks at the end of last year on the main event, one of the weeks that it was his turn, he picked this, and he actually got me to watch it again, and I realized, man, I think I like this match better. And I watched the draw and went, yeah, I think I like this match better, and I think it's a better match. So that's why it's higher. So at number 17 on our list, from the 1990 Great American Bash, Ric Flair versus Sting for the World's Heavyweight title. And this, to me, this is like these two
Sting
matches.
Sting was so much of a better wrestler by that point, too.
Yeah. And to me, this is like Sting was to Flair what Flair was to Harley at Starrcade 83. It was like the coming out parties for both those guys. Matches to me are very similar. At number 16. Yeah. The one, excuse me, that started it all. We go to the Great American Bash, 1987, 4th of July. So this is not pay-per-view. This is the closed circuit. And the debut of arguably a lot of people's favorite gimmick match in wrestling history. On one side, the Four Horsemen. On the other side, Nikita Koloff, Dusty Rhodes, the Road Warriors, and Precious Paul Ellering. I'm, of course, talking about the debut of War Games.
Yeah. I like War Games. I really do. Yeah. That's a great Dusty invention.
Yes, it was. Best part about it is, this isn't our last War Games match. We're going to have one next week. But again, you got the two hottest teams. Let me confirm something, because I always do this. I'm pretty sure that it was Flair, Tully, Arn, and Barry, right? Barry was, right, 87?
Yeah.
I think I'm right.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm right. Yep. Sorry, I'm having, I'm choked up with all these wonderful matches. Yeah, it was. It was Barry Windham. So, against the hot, I mean, it was pretty much the hottest faces versus the hottest, oh no, it was Luger. My bad, it was Luger. Barry didn't turn heel till 88.
Yes, you're right. You're right. I'm getting myself all confused here today.
Yeah, no, I was wrong. Yeah, no, I got the years wrong. It was Luger. Barry didn't turn on Luger till 88. My bad. So it was Rick, Tully, Arn, and Luger with JJ versus Nikita, Dusty, the Road Warriors, and Paul Ellering. So the best heels in Crockett versus the best baby faces in Crockett. And I know you guys on Crock and Roll, I cannot wait till you get to 87 and start talking about the build, because that shit's awesome. Again, Great American Bash, this one was not on pay-per-view. The Bash wouldn't debut on pay-per-view till the following year, 1988. This was still the closed circuit. But you could watch this on the network. There were cameras. I'm trying to remember if there was announcers. I don't think there were. There probably was. Yeah, no, there were announcers. Yeah, it was the birth of the violence and seeing two cages. I mean, it's amazing. Of course, that was one thing that WWE did not adopt until NXT a few years ago. It's never been in WWE, and that's because Vince likes to make money, and he probably finds it foolish to add a ring and add a cage and take away floor seat money, which I guess I can see, but I guess only once in a while it wouldn't hurt. Maybe for Vince it'd be a good outdoor thing because you could spread out floor seats and make money that way anyway. In any event, it's also a Dusty thing, and Vince never likes to acknowledge somebody else having a cool gimmick. We all know how that works. But this match is amazing. So at number 16 on our list from the Great American Bash 1987, the inaugural War Games, the Four Horsemen, this one with Lex Luger and JJ, against Nikita Koloff, Dusty Rhodes, the Road Warriors, and Paul Ellering. And yes, this is not the last War Games match on our list. At number 15, speaking of Barry Windham, this was earlier this year, so he was definitely still a babyface, and I've never seen this match until the Ric Flair DVD set that came out in, I think it was 2004 or 2005. I think it's our last TV match, I think. Probably not, because I usually say things like that. But it's an episode of NWA Worldwide. I know, right? I always do that. This is our last TV match until the one, two matches from now. From the January 20th, 1987 episode of NWA Worldwide, Ric Flair defends the World's Heavyweight Championship against Barry Windham. I remember on the Ric Flair DVD comp, Doctor, you know, like that silvery one that came out in like, it was one of WWE's first big DVD sets in like 2003, 2004. And that's the first time I ever saw that match. And I think it was like 50 minutes or something. And it took up the whole episode of Worldwide. And the match is amazing. Remember how you always say that when Barry Windham is focused, he could be one of the best in the world?
He's...
This match proved that.
Yes.
This match showed that, you know.
Barry, like I said, at one point, he was one of the top 2-3 wrestlers in the world. Again, it's just where his motivation was at the time when he was on, he was on. And, I wish he was one of those guys that really stayed focused all the time, because I think he could have been a good world champion for a while.
I agree. It's unfortunate that he didn't have an extended reign. Mind you, this is weird, because this was like a couple months after Starrcade. You think to yourself, why did they push Barry Windham in 1986 for the match at Starrcade instead of Nikita Koloff turning babyface? And they waited for this match till January of 87. Why did they push after the accident with Magnum TA, why didn't they push Barry Windham for the big singles match at Starrcade 86 with Flair for the title? There's an interesting question. No disrespect to Nikita, but Nikita was a fucking amazing heel.
I think they were looking for something to replace Magnum. And to be honest with you, I mean, I think it was a smart move in the end.
You think so?
But yeah, because you know, we loved that when we were younger. That's the one thing when, you know, things were a little more kayfabe. Like, we loved when that dirty heel became a face. You know, we saw it with Savage in the 80s. We saw it with Paul Orndorff in the 80s. You know, and they wind up being so popular when they become a face.
Mm-hmm.
Because we hated them so much. But then when they came around and they eventually, you know, came to the right side or the good side, everybody loved to cheer them. Because everybody, you always respect that heel. Even though you hated them, you respected them. And so when they were on your side now, you know, at that time when it was, you know, good versus bad, it was, you know, the lines weren't as blurred as they are today.
Correct.
You loved seeing that. So I think they made a smart move with the way they booked Nikita at that time, because they needed something. They needed a shot in the arm. Not to say that Barry Windham couldn't have done it, but I think, you know, he was already a face, so they didn't need to do anything there. Whereas Nikita was something that kind of popped it. You know, they needed something to kind of take away from the realities that Magnum, who was going to be their future world champion, was not there anymore.
True. Good point. No, I agree with that. This match, I don't know if it's on the network, because I don't think Worldwide's not a show on the network. It might be like in the Hidden Gems, but if you have that Ric Flair DVD set that came out, the silvery one that came out in like 2004, that match is on there, and that's where I first saw it. So at number 15 on our list, from an episode of NWA Worldwide, January 20th, 1987, Ric Flair defends the world title against Barry Windham. And I do, and I just realized, we have done 6 matches so far, and 5 of them had Flair in it. Are you stunned that we're in the top 20?
Yeah, I know.
Next, at number 14, speaking of Ric Flair, and speaking of an opponent that he's had many times, here's another one that I had never seen until doing a podcast on our network. We're going to go to March 17th, 1984, from a show called NWA Boogie Jam. Ric Flair defends the NWA World's Heavyweight title against Big Shock, Ricky Steamboat. I did not watch this.
Yeah.
I did not
watch
this
match. They've had so many great matches.
Yeah. I did not watch this match until a past episode of Jenny and the Gems, where we did this show, because this is a hidden gem. I believe this show was at the, no, it wasn't at the Meadowlands. That's another show. It was a show in Charlotte, I think, or Greensboro. It was one of those, you know, big venues. And this match, as usual for Flair and Steamboat, was quite amazing. Again, I think it ended in a draw, if I remember correctly. I think this ended in a draw. But Flair and Steamboat both were baby faces. Flair was a baby face in 84. He was only a heel in Texas when he was feuding with the Von Erichs, but he was a baby face everywhere else. And again, we won't get too deep into it, but it's just another great Ric Flair, Ricky Steamboat match. So not much more to say there. It's on the network. Go to the Hidden Gems and look up Boogie. Just type Boogie Jam and that pops up. So, and then check out the episode of Jenny and the Gems here on the PTB Wrestling Network when we did the whole show. So at number 14 list, another one between from Boogie Jam on March 17th, 1984. Ric Flair defends the World Heavyweight title against Ricky Steamboat. Number 13. Oh my God. Guess what? We're going to go to almost exactly 5 years later to a house show. This I found on YouTube, Dr. G. From March 18th, 1989. Ricky Steamboat defends the NWA World's Heavyweight title against Ric Flair. You're probably thinking, what the fuck are you talking about? I found this match. It was we were talking about matches on one of our chats, and we were talking about Flair and Steamboat. And Chad said to me, "You got to check this match out." Then it's not on the network; it's on YouTube. So, of all places, Dr. G, you know where this house show was? The Cap Center in Landover, Maryland. So Crockett went into
WWE
the Cap Center, which is
territory right there.
Yeah, that's a WWE haunt. Yep, that's a Vince haunt right there. And Holy crap, this match is awesome. Again, Flair Steamboat. It's just a notch above Boogie Jam. Your guys are, and I'm sure a lot of you were like, what about those Steamboat matches? Be patient. Gotta build. Gotta build. Because we want you to see a lot of these Flair Steamboat matches that you've probably never seen before. And this one I get and found on YouTube. Thank you, Chad. So at number 13 on our list, from a Cap Center house show on March 18th, 1989. This time, Ricky Steamboat is the NWA World's Champion, and he defends the belt against Ric Flair. I think the match ended a double countout, I think. It's been a while since I watched it. Was it a double countout or a double DQ or something?
This is like one that. You had. This one I have never seen.
Yeah, that was a surprise. I wanted to surprise you with that one. Number 12 on our list. We go to a show that we've gone to a ton, Doctor, because it's one of my favorite shows of all time. Leap Year Day, February 29th, 1992, Super Brawl 2, which I think we've already had like four matches on this list from the show. But this is, in my opinion, the best one. For the, then it was called the Light Heavyweight Championship, which would eventually become the Cruiserweight Championship. Your champion, Brian Pillman, and the challenger, Jushin Thunder Liger. We already had these two in a match earlier in the countdown when they were on the debut episode of Monday Nitro.
This is a good match, though.
It's an amazing match. And this is where, even pre Bischoff, WCW and Crockett were learning that we need to have something to motivate these younger, smaller guys. So they created a light heavyweight division. At the time, it was called the light heavyweight title. It eventually obviously turned into the Cruiserweight Championship. But more Liger, because we know Liger is one of probably the greatest cruiserweight of all time. Before the injuries to his ankle and all the problems he had, Brian Pillman was a damn good wrestler. And
no, he really was.
He really was, you know? And we tried to do as much as we could and find some really amazing matches that had him in it. And we had the match in 95, and we had when he was with the Blondes, him and Austin. But this is, I think, his standout match of his career against Liger. And again, second time he's faced him. This one obviously was a little meatier because it was on pay-per-view, but it was that it's that damn good. And I think, again, I think it focuses on how great Brian Pillman was as a wrestler before the injuries took toll. You know?
So. Yeah, I mean, Pillman, you know, it's funny. His character got better as the years went on, but because of injuries, his wrestling wasn't as great.
Mm-hmm.
But wow, during this time, he was phenomenal.
Yeah, he really was. And he really brought it to everybody that he was an amazing cruiserweight and an amazing wrestler before, again, the ankle injuries and everything took toll and he kind of went a little crazy. But the guy knew how to work people, that's for sure. So at number 12 on our list from Super Brawl 2, Brian Pillman versus Jushin Thunder Liger for the then Light Heavyweight Championship, eventually will be renamed the Cruiserweight Championship. And finally, the last match on our list for tonight, another gem of a tag match. I watched this match recently, Doctor. I actually watched it at your house. You didn't watch it with me, though. You were in the other room. I think you were working. This match is pretty awesome. Then I watched it again with Mr. Rosero the last time I was in Rhode Island. We're going to go to Clash of the Champions from November 19th, 1991 for the World's Tag Team Championship. The Enforcers, one of my favorite fucking teams of all time. Arn Anderson and Larry Zbysko take on the team of Ricky Steamboat and Dustin Rhodes. This could go down as probably one of the top three Clash matches of all time.
Oh, yeah.
How good. Another case. It's amazing, Doctor, how awesome a cerebral worker Arn Anderson was. Because it didn't matter what kind of guy his tag team partner was. It was just like putting on another pair of gloves.
Yeah. I mean, and Arn could work with anyone. I mean, Arn worked well with Zbysko. He worked really well with Bobby Eaton.
Yep,
obviously, we've had that
matches with him. Yeah, I can't even fathom how many Arn tag matches we have on this list. And they're all different partners. It's outrageous. It's absolutely outrageous. The match is absolutely amazing. It's fun. Zbyszko is like, it's like his second life after, you know, AWA shit the bed. And he kind of came here. He had the big, you know, it would continue being the growth of the Dangerous Alliance. More on them next week. It was just so much fun.
Which was not around that long, but it made an impact.
Yeah, it did. No, it really did. It really did. Definitely check this match out. I don't know what, I don't have the number. I just have the date. I think it's Clash, like, I don't know, 14 or 15, I think. But the date is November 19th, 1991, number 11 on our list. The Enforcers defend the World's Tag Team Championship against Dustin Rhodes and Ricky Steamboat. Again, Ricky Steamboat. Ricky Steamboat, another guy that could tag with anybody, you know? So, perfect point we were talking about earlier, Doctor. One Ricky Steamboat match I had in my GWW list. Of course, it was number one, but it was my one Steamboat match. And how many Steamboat matches now through 90 matches? Probably like 15, 16, 17 matches.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Because, again, the audience. Ricky Steamboat was the kind of guy that a Southern Crockett audience enjoyed. And as much as he was a great babyface in WWE, that wasn't the kind of guy that you would put that Vince liked at the top of the card. He wanted bombastic guys with a lot of sizzle and charisma, and, you know. And then, of course, you know, he had a hard-on for Steamboat for a long time after what happened in 87, but that's another story altogether. Not a bad set of 10 matches, Doctor. And I think 8 of them had Flair in it. Are you really surprised where we are in the countdown?
No. So, you knew we were getting more into Flair country here. And again, Ricky Steamboat, I mean, when those two work together, Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat, you know, Ricky Steamboat, we've seen him in various matches. I mean, he could go with anyone. Now, you may not feel he's, you know, has that charisma that, like, Vince is looking for kind of thing. But right. In terms of his in-ring work, whew, you know, he's up there with everyone.
I agree with you 100%. Yes, you're exactly right. All right. So before we wrap up, let's recap the 10 matches real quick. At number 20, from Fall Brawl 1995, Ric Flair versus Arn Anderson. At number 19, from Spring Stampede 1994, the Nasty Boys versus Cactus Jack and Max Payne in a street fight. At number 18, from Starrcade 1983, Harley Race versus Ric Flair for the world's title in a cage. At number 16, from the 1987 Great American Bash, the inaugural War Games, the Four Horsemen against Nikita, Dusty, the Road Warriors, and Paul Ellery. At number 15, from the January 20th, 1987 episode of Worldwide, Ric Flair defends the world title against Barry Windham. At number 14, from NWA Boogie Jam, March 17th, 1984, Ric Flair defends the world title against Ricky Steamboat. At number 13, from the March 18th, 1989 NWA House Show from the Cap Center, Ricky Steamboat defends the world title against Ric Flair. At number 12, from Super Brawl 2, Brian Pillman defends the Cruiserweight title against Jushin Liger. And at number 11, from Clash of the Champions, November 19th, 1991, the Enforcers defend the world's titles, tag team titles, against Ricky Steamboat and Dustin Rhodes. 90 down, 10 to go.
10 to go.
And Doctor, you're probably getting somewhat of an idea in your head on the matches that are in the top 10. I know you're getting a good idea.
Yeah, oh yeah, no
you're
doubt.
You're just wondering where.
Yeah, you're going to surprise me.
I am going to surprise you. Yes, I am. So, that'll
we
do
haven't
it.
Had, we haven't argued too much, so far I'm pretty much in agreement here.
All right, well, maybe the top 10. I know one match you've been waiting for. I know one match you've definitely been waiting for, and maybe it'll be on the list next Saturday morning. I think it's for you. It's a question of where that match is. That'll do it for this week's episode of the NWA Saturday Special. A little longer than normal, but we were pumped beyond recognition, and we had to, of course, eulogize the great Jim Crockett Jr. So we hope you enjoyed the show this week. Doctor, you can find him on Twitter at DrGPTB. You can find me on Twitter at PTBPodfather. And you can follow the brand on Twitter at PlaceToBeNation. Follow us with all the great shows. Special message from me later on the feed, so stay tuned for that. We got a full week of shows next week. Place to Be podcast, Extreme Resurrection, Jacob and Tyler with another GWCW reveal of their own, Highway to the Impact Zone, special episode of Croc and Roll, and then you and I, Doctor, will be back next Saturday morning. We'll update you on Back for the Attack, Power, any new info on pricing and all that kind of stuff, and we will reveal our top 10. So the list concludes next week.
Oh, yeah.
Been a lot of fun. Have a great week, everybody. Be safe. I'm Scott. He's the Doctor. You're not.
Ooh, yeah. Back for the Attack. Kill.
I don't think he'll be on the show.
Dig it.
To the past.